That the word home is one of the sweetest words in any language. But it's very much a Bible subject. There are many scriptures from beginning to end in the Bible that have to do with the subject, many texts. And of course, it actually has a lot to do with our salvation. Christ said in Matthew 22:30 that in the resurrection they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are like the angels of God in heaven. So it's not eternal. Marriage is not eternal. But it certainly is divine. As we read in Genesis 2:24, for this reason a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. So marriage, the home, this relationship is very much governed by God. I think we can say that the two happiest places on earth will be the home and the church. Let's talk just briefly about courtship and emphasize that anybody, but we're thinking primarily of young people, is not just a time, not just for having a good time. And the major consideration is not just how attractive or how beautiful or how educated or how athletic, how popular he or she may be. There are some very important questions to ask. First of all, is this person really free to marry? What about their character? So extremely important that before entering marriage, that each knows, really knows, about the character of this person with whom they plan to spend the rest of their life. What about their disposition? You really think, are you really confident that you're going to be able to get along? You know, sometimes even during courtship, certain things are kind of obvious. But we're so much in love, you know, oh well, you know, we'll work that out. Well, we'll be all right. A lot of times there are things that they will not get over. There are major considerations. What about the church? Here's this young lady, here's this young man. Oh, I'm just so attracted, I'm so fascinated. Okay, but what about their attitude toward the church? What about their attitude toward the Bible? Christ, does this matter? This is extremely important. Are you really good friends? Really and truly, good friends. Can you communicate? Are you mature? Are both mature? The Bible says leave and cleave. Leave father and mother and cleave to your wife. Will he be the head of the family? Will she be in subjection? How does he or she treat their family? So, well, what's that got to do with it? It's got everything to do with it. One of our boys fell in love with a girl, and he just thought she was the greatest. She invited him home with her for the holidays, and he went out to Phoenix and stayed in the home for a few days, and after that, he said, no way, because he saw how she treated her parents and brothers and sisters. That's the way she'd treat him. What about work? Does he work? Is he willing to work, make a living? Is he responsible? What about finances? You mean that during courtship we need to think about all those things? You certainly do. We certainly do. What about the contribution? We're going to have this income from whatever source, it's going to be ours. But what about the contribution? What about children? Should that be discussed during courtship? Absolutely. What about in-laws? Sometimes the boy says, I just want her. I don't care anything about her in-law, about her family. That won't work. That's her family. You get married, you've got a complete set of in-laws. The purposes of marriage. So very important that we keep this in mind. First of all, companionship. Genesis 2:18, it is not good that man be alone. I'll make him a helper suitable for him. 1 Corinthians 7, let's read this. This is something that I think many times even members of the church don't pay any attention to. And it's crucial. It's crucial to pleasing God and having a good marriage. Paul says in this text, verse 2, because of fornication, sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife, let each woman have her own husband, let the husband render to his wife the affection due her. He's talking about intimate relation. And likewise, also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body. In other words, she's not the exclusive owner of her body now if she's married to him. But the husband does. And likewise, the husband doesn't have authority over his own body. But the wife does. Do not deprive one another because you have some kind of spat, some kind of little upset, use sex as a weapon. And that's sinful. Just plain sinful. Do not deprive each other except with consent for a time that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer and come together again so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. You know, this is repudiation. You know, Matthew 5 and Matthew 9, he talks about divorcing or putting away. The word basically is repudiation. That's the bottom line. And this is repudiation. It's one aspect of it. And it's a crucial aspect of it. What about children? Genesis 1:28, be fruitful, God says. Doesn't mean, of course, that one couple has to do it all. Genesis 3 and 33 and verse 5, when Esau saw all this tribe coming that Jacob had, he saw the women and children and said, who are these? And he said, the children whom God has graciously given your servant. That's a beautiful thought. Who are all these children? They're children that God has given to me. Psalms 127:3, behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. Marriage is to be permanent. No question about this. Matthew 19:6, so then they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate. And brethren, just to stop and think that a man and a woman make the decision to be husband and wife and become intimate, their lives now that they share in the most intimate way, and then have problems and get angry and separate and go their separate ways, and they go off with all this knowledge that they've gained from their spouse. Let no man separate. Matthew 5:32, whoever... And incidentally, the word divorces. When we see the word divorce, we're thinking about lawyers and judges and paperwork and all of that. That's not in this. That basically all in the world of Christ is saying is that you put away, you dismiss, you repudiate your companion. And he says that whoever does this for any reason except fornication, sexual immorality, causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a woman who's divorced commits adultery. Matthew 19:9, I say to you that whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another woman commits adultery. These verses need to be burned into the minds of every person who gets married. Romans 7:2, the woman who has a husband is bound by the law to her husband as long as he lives. Of course, the exception being what we just saw in Matthew. But if the husband dies, she is released from the law of her husband. So then, if while her husband lives, she marries another man, she'll be called an adulteress. She marries him. You've got two words here. She's bound to her husband. He's still alive. But she marries another man. She's married. Someone says, oh, well, they're not married. Yeah, they're married. But she's an adulteress. This is really an alarming thought. Still bound to her husband, even though she marries another man. 1 Corinthians 7 and 10, but to the married I give instructions, not I, but the Lord. In other words, what Paul is saying here is the same thing as Matthew 5, Matthew 19. Same thing. That the wife should not leave. There's the word separate. Here you have the word divorce, which is put away, dismiss, repudiate, and then separate. Same thing. Leave. Same thing. Abandon. Same thing. All of these terms mean the very same thing. You're talking about separating what God joined. But if she does depart, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband. Now, Paul isn't saying, well, you know, if she does leave him, it's okay just so she doesn't marry again. Paul isn't saying that. He's not saying it's okay for her to leave him. He's not saying that. He said, don't do it. This is prohibited. Don't do it. But if you do, what's he saying? Well, don't make matters worse. It's bad enough that you've broken up this tie that God made. And so you should remain unmarried or be reconciled. Because if you marry again, now you're looking at something far more complicated. And then have children in the second marriage, and here you go. It becomes a very, very complicated situation. Malachi 2:16, God says, I hate putting away. I hate divorce. It breaks the vows. It breaks this covenant. Proverbs 2:17 talks about the woman who forsakes the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. A man and a woman make an agreement, a commitment. They come together. They have a pact. And that is made between them and God. It's a triangle. It's not just a man and a woman. You have a commitment of a man and a woman with God. So it's a three-way, covenant. Malachi 2:14, she's your companion and your wife by covenant. So divorce separates what God joins. In remarriage, most couples commit adultery. That's a horrible, this is a tragic thought. No problem so far as the law is concerned, as far as the government's concerned. You can marry and divorce, and it's always legal. Always legal, legal, legal. Just comply with the law. But the government is not in charge of marriage. The government does not marry people. The government doesn't marry anybody. The government simply records that they register these weddings, and then there are certain factors, certain rights, and this and that and the other concerning this marriage. But so far as the government is concerned, you can be a homosexual. They'll even marry homosexuals. So forget about the government. Point of it is that God's law tells us about it clearly. Incidentally, all this talk about how the different states are accepting homosexual marriage, well, how long will it be before the states accept polygamy? You say, oh, it won't happen. Don't kid yourself. It will happen too. It's just a matter of time. Because the government, you can't expect the government to have that. They don't have any scruples with regard to the law of God. We've already mentioned that divorce destroys the defense against fornication. This is not taken into consideration. Sometimes a person says, I want to be free. I want to get away from this. Nothing could be worse than this. Yes, it is. It is worse than that. Because now you have no protection against fornication. So, well, I can handle it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. A lot of people handle it. This is God's arrangement. When God does something, it's perfect. It's good. It's a blessing. And when men trample on marriage the way they're doing today in this country, there are horrible consequences. Horrible, horrible consequences. And we wonder sometimes, how long will God put up with it? You know, I mean, you think about Sodom and Gomorrah, and you know, You wonder if, well, if he doesn't punish this country, he's going to have to apologize to Sodom and Gomorrah. This is traumatic. When marriages break up, it is traumatic for everybody, but especially for the children. You know, a lot of times little kids even get it in their head that maybe they were to blame for mom and daddy splitting up. Even they take on that guilt complex. So, be Christians. Make your marriage work. Ephesians 5:23, God's way. The husband is the head of the wife, as also Christ is head of the church. He's the director, he's the superintendent, he's the leader, he's the example, he's the teacher. He provides the needs of his family. Material, spiritual, social, he provides for his family. Teach, train, discipline, protect. It's his family, it's his wife, it's his children. Love his wife as Christ loves the church. Love your wife as you love yourself. Ephesians 5:28-29. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. And if he doesn't love his wife, he doesn't love himself. Paul said, well, no one ever hated his own flesh. Well, in one way of looking at it, of course not. But he nourishes and cherishes his own flesh. And by the same token, he needs to nourish and cherish his wife. He needs to express his love in actions, but also in word. Do we do that, men? Do we do that as we should? Express your love not only... We say, well, I show my wife that I love her by my action. Well, that's true. That's good. But she needs to hear it in words too. Like this woman was complaining, said, my husband never tells me that he loves me. He said, woman, years ago when we got married, I told you that I loved you, and if I ever change my mind, I'll let you know. That's about the way it goes sometimes. That's just about the way some men feel about it. And that's tragic. Women have very short memories. They don't remember. You've got to keep telling them over and over and over. Proverbs 31:28, her husband praises her. How about that? Do we do that, brethren? Her husband praises her. For what? Not only for being beautiful and being dressed real nice, but also the meal. That was a good meal. Praise her for taking care of the children, being so good to them. 1,000 things. Praise her. And never, as Paul says in Colossians 3:19, never, ever be cruel. Husbands, love your wives and do not be bitter toward them. Here's the problem. Here's the danger. And it happens. I've heard of it. This is not just something I made up. For example, a man comes home from work. And a lot of times, just almost daily, there are things in the work that are frustrating. There are things that cause aggravation. The boss, the employees, the customers, somebody. And the husband's all uptight when he leaves the work and then comes home and unloads on his poor wife. Makes her a victim. And that's just plain stupid. That's ridiculous. I told a man one time, I said, when you get off work, don't go home. This woman called and just really crying, taking on about how her husband was unloading on her because of all his frustration. I said, don't go home. Go to the park. Walk around in the park. Stay out there. You cool off. Get this thing off your mind. Then come home and be normal with your and be good to your family. Proverbs 12:18, there is one who speaks like the piercings of a sword. That's true. There are a lot of men who would never lay a hand on their wife to hit them. Of course not. And yet, what about this? Words cut. Words hurt. There's one who speaks like the piercings of a sword. Proverbs 18:21, death and life are in the power of the tongue. Someone says, oh, well, I know we argue. But then we make up, you know, and everything's like, yeah, but listen, don't kid yourself. That leaves scars. That's not the end of it. Oh, well, it's all over. No, it's not. Leave scars. Accumulation. Accumulation of those scars lead to something even far worse. 1 Peter 3:7, husbands likewise dwell with them with understanding. When Peter says that, I think a good way to put it is, be considerate of your wife at all times. Be considerate of your wife. Dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. Be thoughtful, be understanding, be considerate, because fussing and arguing will stop all praying, and even, it'll even stop, or at least affect, church attendance. You ever hear that? I have. What's the use of going? Why be a hypocrite? Yeah. Why go to church like that? Many souls, many, many souls are lost because of domestic quarrels. Wife, be in subjection to her husband. She is created to be his companion, to be his helper. As to salvation, of course, equal. Galatians 3:28, there's neither Jew nor Greek, neither slave nor free, neither male nor female, for you're all one in Christ Jesus. But the divine order, this is God, this is God's way. 1 Corinthians 11:3, the head of every man is Christ, the head of woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. But subjection does not mean inferiority. Any man with any sense, any man with a lick of sense knows that he's not superior to his wife. She's superior to him in a lot of ways. That's not the point. We're to be in subjection to the government. We're in subjection to the elders. That doesn't mean we're inferior to them. Subjection is simply God's order in the home. So, she's not just resisting her husband. The woman, even we said in 1 Peter 3, and that's last week, that she has to be in subjection even though her husband isn't a Christian. That's God's order too. And the woman who resists this, of course, is not just resisting her husband, she's resisting God. Let's read this. This is a tremendous, tremendous text. 1 Peter 3, 1-4, wives, likewise be submissive to your own husbands, even that even if some do not obey the word, they, without a word, he's not saying without the gospel, without your pushing and talking and nagging and aggravating them, without a word, may be won by the conduct of their wives, as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. Your adornment must not be merely external, braiding the hair, wearing gold jewelry, and putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. Does this mean a wife can't speak up? Of course she can. But in a good way, in a sensible way, in a respectful way. She can say whatever she needs to say, whether the husband's a Christian or not. But she can do it in the right way. She can do it with the right attitude. Instead of being obnoxious and just creating all kinds of animosity. 1 Timothy 2:15, she'll be saved. She says she's not to preach. She's not to have authority over a man, not to teach over a man. But she'll be saved in childbearing. Brethren and sisters, there is no more important work under God's sun, in anywhere in the universe, there is no more important work than the work of women in the home as homemakers. She'll be saved in childbearing if they continue in faith, love, and holiness with self-control. Paul said in 1 Timothy 5:14, I desire that the younger women, the younger widows, marry, bear children, manage the house, so she can make it a castle, make it a paradise, make it a refuge. That's what God wants. And then she'll be happy. She'll not say, well, I'm a slave, you know. I'm not independent. I want to go out and make it on. I want a career. I want my own car, my own check. I want to make it on my own. Okay, that's not God's way. And that's not the way of happiness. Here it is. God spells it out. Here's where you render your greatest service in God's kingdom. Older women teach the younger women to be discreet, chaste, homemakers. And that word means workers at home. If you'll study that word homemakers, or whatever, however it is in your Bible, but if you'll study it, Paul is saying workers at home. That's her work. Workers at home. Good. Obedient to her husband, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. Timothy, great evangelist. Look at all that Timothy did. Yeah, but what if they hadn't been a Lois or a Eunice? Don't start with Timothy. Start with her grandmother Lois and his grandmother Lois and his mother Eunice. Role of parents. Ephesians 6 and 4. Apostle Paul tells parents, he talks to children, talks to parents, how that children obey your parents and honor your father and mother, and you fathers do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. First of all, parents, number one, example. There's no more important teaching. There are no rules and regulations. There's nothing that will take the place of example. The example of parents in the home. Who you are, what you are, your character, your disposition, your attitude, your role in the church, your attendance. If your attendance isn't good, how in the world do you expect your children to grow up thinking that attendance is important? They won't do it. Probably drop out altogether. And not only attend all the services and classes, but also participate and have a wholesome attitude toward the church. Be examples in every way for your children. In work. We always quote Deuteronomy 6, 6 and 7 to show that parents are the principal teachers of their children. These words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in the house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. Of course, you can't do that. I mean, you can be teaching them unless they're on the phone and watching TV and on the internet and listening to stereo and playing with electronic gadgets and doing homework. You know, there's no chance. You can't teach them because they're doing all these things. Well, that's where we ignore God's way and substitute our own way. And teach them, not only teach them, but teach them effectively. Joshua 4 and 6, that this may be a sign among you when your children ask in time to come, saying, what do these stones mean? Parents should be able to explain to their children, answer their questions intelligently. Why was there such apostasy in the nation of Israel? Judges says that after Joshua and those that survived Joshua, that there arose another generation that did not know God. How could that be? Well, go back and read Deuteronomy again. And you think, well, it won't happen today. Our future is secure. There'll be a strong church here this year, next year, 10 years from now, 25 years from now, on into the future. Really? Really? You real sure of that? Sometimes a person will say, well, I taught them. I know my kids are not faithful, but I taught them. Well, did we teach them effectively? Did we teach them with ample Bible knowledge and with solid conviction? and with genuine enthusiasm? Did we really do all that? Were we consistent? It takes time to teach children. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time to train and to rear children. Something that just is very, very difficult to understand and to really believe. But it takes time. It takes self-discipline. If a person decides, I'm going to get married and I'm going to have a family, you've made the decision that I'm going to give a big, big chunk of my life to teaching my children, because I guarantee you it's going to take it. Bible stories. So very, very important from the very earliest age. Very earliest age. Small, small children. They have intelligence that we can't begin to comprehend. I think I've mentioned this before, but the little two-year-old boy was walking in and out of it was fixing almost time to start the service down in Mexico, and this little boy was in and out eating a rosnir. And I got his daddy's attention. I caught his attention and I pointed at his kid. And he said, yeah, I'm going to teach him when he gets old enough to understand. He knew what he was doing. He's eating rosnir. And he didn't care he was about to start church. Children can understand. And you tell them these Bible stories on their level, and then let them repeat. Just as soon as they can talk, let them start repeating it and getting it stamped into their minds with the lessons that go with it to produce faith and love and courage and all of this. But there again, it takes time, doesn't it? It takes a lot of time. Let the children participate. Let them tell the Bible stories. Put them in the role of the teacher to commit themselves. This is so they'll commit themselves in what they're doing. Provoke. Paul said, don't provoke your children to wrath. How do we do that? Don't provoke your children to wrath by being abusive, by being unfair, by being partial, by ignoring them. You ever know a parent doing that to a little child? Just ignore them? I was talking to a brother one time, a little six-year-old girl came walking in right kind of close to him, but didn't say a word. She just standing there listening to us talk. But obviously she wanted his attention, because her mother had sent her to tell her the meal was ready or something, and he ignored her. That's the sort of thing that we need to be concerned about. And if we're inconsistent in the matter of discipline or neglected, a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. Of course, she ought to be ashamed for rearing him that way in the first place. We need to do the teaching that we should, be good to them, praise every obedience, and there'll be little need for corporal punishment. Just so they obey. They must learn obedience and never outgrow Bible wisdom. Proverbs 13:24, he who spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. And then, of course, parents must be united in this. So much more about the home. But I am fully persuaded, brethren, that how we do in our marriage, how we conduct ourselves in our marriage has a lot to do with the church. Time and time again, marriage problems, family problems spill over into the congregation and create all kinds of problems and even dissension and worse. But we're simply, in all of this, we're simply illustrating once again. We're illustrating and emphasizing that God's way is the only way. Not the best way, it's the only way. And it's the way that makes for happiness. It's the way that God blesses us. God is not simply saying, okay, now here, I want to teach you this, and if you'll do this, then down the road over here somehow, I'm gonna heap blessings upon you. That's not the idea. The idea is that you obey me. You walk in my ways. And in that very thing, you're being blessed. in that very thing of doing what I say and living the way I say and carrying out my will, in that I am blessing you. Not a matter of tomorrow and the next day and the judgment day. It's right now. It's the way of blessedness. And we rob ourselves. We deny ourselves when we turn our back on God's way. I hope that something I've said this morning will cause all of us to give serious thought to these matters regarding the home and family, because I am fully persuaded that as go the marriages, as go the home, so goes the church. There's a connection that just simply cannot be ignored. The brother has an invitation song for anyone that has not obeyed the gospel, have not begun this life of doing what God says. You're denying yourself. You're not only denying Christ, you're denying yourself. You're robbing yourself. And this very day, if you'll come to Christ believing, repenting, to confess Christ as the Son of God, be baptized for the remission of sins, or if you're out of duty, return. While we stand and sing the invitation song.